Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beaten Track podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. Today's episode, I get to sit down and have a good old chat with Matt Morgan. This is a great episode. We realised quite quickly that we grew up not too far from one another. And although there's a few years between us, there's lots of kind of reference points that we're very similar at in regards to kind of music scenes and I won't go too into it because we're about to press play on the chat itself. But before we do that, just quickly I want to say thanks to Scroobius Pip and everybody at the Distraction Pieces Network. Thanks to 76, my producer. And if you enjoyed this, or even if this is like your first time listening to Off the Beaten Track, then go and have a look in the archives because there's over 150 episodes featuring some of your favourite musicians, actors, comedians, producers, DJs. Go and have a rummage around in the archives and see if there's anything there that tickles your fancy. Anyway, back to today's episode. Please enjoy Off the Beaten Track podcast with Matt Morgan. I've got an announcement. Save Our Souls Clothing. www.sosclothing.co.uk. Why am I telling you this? Because they're our official sponsor. Yeah, that's right. Go and check them out because their clothing is off the scale. You're going to love it. So they've decided they want to be our sponsor, which is amazing. And what I have to do is I have to tell you about why they're amazing. So here's a little bit of blurb. So they've only been going a year. And they're based in Southend-on-Sea, just up the road from me. They put the company together based on a love of tattoos and alternative music. And they've worked with some of the greatest artists around the world to produce these items of clothing that are as unique as you lot. All of the designs are printed using biodegradable, sustainable and water-based inks. In addition to that, they only print on garments made by members of Fairwear Foundation. I mean, come on, great clothing and a conscience. Since going live in April last year, they've seen their audience grow massively and are now selling orders all across the world. And they were recognised by Cosmopolitan magazine as one of the best sustainable clothing brands alongside names such as Stella McCartney. I mean, that's quite a first year, right? So go and check them out because they've put a lot of love into supporting this podcast and I couldn't be happier. What else they've done is they've given you 15% off. So if you head over to www.sosclothing.co.uk, do a bit of shopping, see what you like, throw it in the basket, and then on the way out, put in the discount code BEAT15, BEAT15, and that'll save you 15% off. Amazing, right? www.sosclothing.co.uk. Official sponsors of Off the Beaten Track podcast. Let's get back to that podcast.
It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network with me, Stu Whiffin.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beaten Track podcast. Hope you're all doing well. Sitting opposite me today via the means of Zoom is Matt Morgan. Hello.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm all right, mate. I've built a patio. I've laid some slabs down on my lawn today and it's exhausting.
Did you do it properly? Did you put all the sand and that down first?
No, mate. I used to be a labourer and I know exactly how you're meant to do a patio.
Right.
Because we're renting, I thought, just get some slabs put, because the lawn looks really flat. And yeah, Obviously, once you put the slabs down, you realise, oh, fucking hell, this is not flat. So the shed I've bought that's meant to go on it, the company say, send us a picture of your base that we're meant to build this on, because they don't guarantee sheds built on wonky bases, obviously, because it makes the shed start to fall apart. So I think I'm going to have to either get a proper builder in or pick these slabs are like 50 kilograms each. So they're horrible to move around. And there's 30 of them. And I've got most of them in, but like it looks well shit. It looks so bad.
I mean, this is, I'm just going to press record on here as well, Matt. Just so I've got a backup as well. Arguably the most manly intro to this podcast yet. We've spoke sheds and laying patio slabs.
I know, it's ridiculous. My agent, because my day job is writing, in the middle of doing it, I'm such a weird Walter Mitty character that I was wearing like the right gear and I was doing it, and I just, you know, when you sit down and have a break from physical labour and you think, yeah, in the sun, and it was just like, totally believed that I was a builder.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I phoned my mate who's a landscaper to ask him his advice, and he went, oh, mate, I fucking hate landscaping. It's so hard. And I went, yeah, I know. I'd literally done about an hour. And then my agent called me and she was like, oh, we've got the contract for that thing you're writing. And I was like, it was like, have you got the wrong number, love? I'm a fucking labourer. I'm building a wonky patio on grass. But yeah, that's what I've been doing today. So I am all right. I'm good. How are you?
I'm all right.
Like a man who's been to Ibiza.
Do you know what? Like, I do get a tan pretty easily, but I've only been. I actually went back into London today for the first time.
And, oh, did you?
Yeah, it was quite strange. I live in Grays, in Essex, and I literally got on a train for the first time this morning, thinking this is going to be rammed with. You know, sort of people that lay patios and sheds. And it wasn't. There wasn't any kind of, like, builders on the train. There was no suits. And, like, got off at Fenchurch and had a little stroll through to East London. And it was, it was really nice. It was like when you go to London on a Sunday and you sort of walk around the city and there's no one in there. It was quite surreal. But
you were wearing a mask?
Yeah.
Is that the law? Is it the law? I haven't commuted, so... I didn't go into town that often this year anyway, but I haven't been. I had this vision when it all first kicked off of like going into. I just had this like future vision of going into Charing Cross, coming out and looking around and going, fucking hell, it's mental to be back here. After like, you know, that was my daily life or, you know, weekly life sort of thing. And I can imagine, not like 28 days later, like everything's there. But when this all kicked off, I thought, I know that I'm not going to be in central London for ages now. I know people are going back and stuff, but it is weird, isn't it? It's like I was reading out, because think how much the world's changed. You know, like what a machine that was going into town. If you were anywhere near rush hour as well, which I imagine media people, we're on a 10 o'clock start more than an 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock start. But like there's just thousands and thousands of people, trains constantly. It's just a machine, isn't it, for moving people in. And then I read it was like down to 5% at one point so when you think before this virus, you would have looked at that and thought, this could never change. That is our life. There's very few things that would change it. Like, even if there was a war and, you know, London was getting bombed not that that would happen like that, like the, you know, Second World War, but people would still commute in. You'd still have massive numbers. So a pandemic's really like the only thing I can think of that would have just blitzed that, because it's like you're not safe doing it. You know what I mean? What was it like? All the coffee shops and everything. Does it look like different or?
No, not really. Like when I walked back to the station, like there was loads of like sort of people standing outside the boozers having a drink and that in the sun, which like, it sounds stupid, Matt, but like the sound of it was really nice. It was like, oh, there's loads of people talking and having a drink. And I hadn't heard that for a long time. So that sounded really nice, but just sort of walking through, like, all the kind of, most of the restaurants were shut and stuff. And, like I say, the city was just empty. There was no suits and there was nothing was happening there. But when you sort of got more into East and, there was a lot more movement. But, yeah, it was still well weird. Yeah. I went up there, like, about 10 days into it, all, like, kicking off just to go and get me, like, computer and that at the office. And that was surreal. It took me, like, I drove up there and it, like, took me 20 minutes to drive into London, which would normally take, like, an hour. And I just pulled up and just sort of, it was so fucking crazy. I run into this, like, office within a big, like, in one of them WeWork setups. And I run in there and I had, like, a cap on. I had a bandana around my face and gloves. And, like, the guy in the office went, yeah, just grab all the Macs, just grab everything you can get. Like, because he didn't know when it was ever going to finish. I must have looked like such a fucking maniac. Like, just filling my bags with all this expensive stuff and then just running back out this empty office with one security guy sort of looking at me as if to go, like, oh, I ain't even going to stop you because I don't want to touch you because I don't know what you got. And but when I put it all in my car, before I sort of drove off, I just stopped. And it was, like, slap bam in the middle of, like, Shoreditch, which is, like, just a fucking shitstorm of people constantly.
Yeah.
And there wasn't a soul anywhere. Like, anywhere I looked, there was no one. And I was like, I'm just going to kind of breathe this in for a couple of minutes because it's never going to be like this again, you know? It was, like, very surreal moment.
But, I did have that feeling, like, oh, everything's gone. Like, what the world before is gone. This ain't coming back. Like, everything's changed. And, like, so it is nice when you walk past the pub and see what looks like normal life.
Yeah.
Then, you know, you'll see the odd mask every now and again and think, oh, yeah. But, like, it is nice because I honestly thought, like, at the beginning when I was reading about what it was like in China and people dropping dead, I was just like, oh, we're fucked. Like, yeah, this is the end of humanity as we knew it. But it ain't that. As soon as, like, Nando's is open again, you just went... Now, if this was a horror film, they wouldn't open Nando's again.
Of course.
It's undermined the fear. But,
brilliant.
Still haven't had Nando's, actually. But, right, should we talk music then?
Let's do it.
Become patios and viruses.
Matt, the song with the greatest ever intro.
Mate, this is so hard to answer things like this because, obviously, and I bet everyone says this, you ask me on one day, it'll be something else, right? But I've gone for Black Sabbath, Black Sabbath.
Nice.
Because from the moment I hear that rain sample and then the bell, the distant bell, which I think they had to tune to the song by slowing down the tape recording of a bell or whatever until it was in tune. And then that riff coming in, like, whatever I'm doing, like, whenever that song comes on, it puts me into, like, the first moments of some sort of 70s horror film. I don't know, it's so evocative and effective, even though it is essentially a rain sample, a distant bell, and, you know, that riff. Although that riff is the, what's that called? The Devil's, can't remember what it's called, but the Devil's, God, I've got to look it up because... Somebody, you know, that there's a meme that says the closest thing to being a ghost is listening to two people on a podcast not be able to remember something when you know it.
You know.
And it's like, right, hang on. There's the tritone, the three notes, it sort of sounds wrong. And it was a band in the Middle Ages or whatever that was called the Devil's something. And it was seen as, because it's sort of discordant, down. It was like, Devil's Interval,
right?
It's called, and so the unsettling sound of tritones, so it's like there's something unsettling, but I've always found comfort in that. I don't know, I just love that intro. So it's not the best build up, it's not anything like that, but it is very powerful way of like when it's raining and grey and stuff, I feel like, oh, that's Black Sabbath weather. Yeah. And then as soon as I put that song on, it's like, oh yeah, it takes me, I don't know what age, I suppose teenage years when I found, I think, you know, somebody, anything that sounded scary and weird and stuff. And we also, when we were like 16, 17, hung around with like these older biker rocker people who are like Motorhead, Black Sabbath and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so it was quite cool. Do you know what I mean? Like, even though it's not seen as cool really. And I remember yeah, they were into, I remember getting Iron Maiden, Number of the Beast, and the first song, or second song, or whatever, is 666, the yeah. Number of the Beast. And it's that Bible reading or whatever it is. And I genuinely, having a Catholic upbringing or whatever, I genuinely thought, oh God, this is power. This is like satanic music. I thought it was like really possibly dangerous.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like it was an incantation that could do something. So it's around that time, but like I wouldn't listen to, well, maybe very rarely, but Iron Maiden, all the other stuff sort of dropped away. But yeah. Black Sabbath, I just thought, no, actually there is, it's blues really, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, totally.
But I love it. So that's my, I'll have that as my intro.
Did you go straight for that? Or was there any kind of honourable mentions, considerations?
I didn't put any down. What else was I thinking? Oh, there's that song, Minnie Riperton. Is it called Les Fleurs?
Yeah.
You know that song?
Yeah, it's a lovely song.
Because it's got that build. It starts off like that pretty little, like, yeah. soul song, and then it's got that huge choral yeah. thing going on. It's
huge.
And that is also something, yeah, that when I hear that, I just think, and it's often used in films, isn't it? It's like, it crops up in a lot of films and stuff, but...
It sounds religious, doesn't it? It sounds like, it's so choral, yeah. it's like, yeah.
Just like, so, when I first heard that, you know, when you hear something and you think, I know this, I've dreamt this, this feels yeah. like it's always existed. Do you know what I mean? Like, I remember hearing that, and it probably was because it had been in four films that I'd seen. Mm. And I'm like, I've dreamt this, I knew about this. But it feels, I remember when I first, because it's 60s, I think, or yeah. 70s. And when I first heard it, I was like, oh, it sounded of the time I was listening to it in the 90s. And it sounded like, really well produced, like they'd layered in.
Somebody done it in the 90s, though, didn't they? It was there was a who done it in the 90s? Oh God, I can literally tell you because I listened to it on Sunday, which is quite bizarre. It was
what's it called? Like
Le Fleur. Fleur.
Oh yeah, yeah. Le Fleur, the flowers. Right, so I'm just on the old Spotify. Yeah. Minnie Riperton. Oh, Salut, Say Cool. Is it that?
No.
Star Slinger remix?
Four Hero.
Right. Four Hero. That's yeah. not on my... They must have called it something else then.
It was around the time of kind of Portishead Massive and stuff like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was thinking. Yeah, I was yeah. thinking, this sounds like something Tricky's produced.
Yeah.
All right, maybe I heard it then and yeah. then found the older version, but that's the only version I've listened mm. to recently is the Minnie Riperton. But like... Yeah, that. I was also thinking, I mean, I don't know, Paradise City, I think, when I was a kid, like, because it's, I mean, Paradise City is just, like, big and
yeah.
that evocative for me. And but then when it goes into that sort of nasty, fast bit,
yeah,
it's like, yeah, you know, that's good. But, I think I'll plump for Black Sabbath and stick there. That, nice. This wasn't one of the ones that challenged me as much, actually.
Okay. Well, let's try track two then. First song you remember hearing, Matt, that had an emotional impact on you.
Right. I've sort of loosened up the meaning of emotional.
Any emotion can be good or bad. Happy, sad.
Sexual. I've gone for sexual.
Nice.
I don't know why, but when I was a kid, I... Like, there were certain songs that were almost like a sexual awakening. Like, it was just overpoweringly, especially the video.
Right.
But, like, the emotion it stirred in me was a sexual one. And even though I was a kid of, like, 8 or 9, I remember thinking, oh, when I get older, I can really act on these feelings. I knew there was good things in the post in terms, I don't know, I just sort of, so anyway, let me say the things, right? So there's three songs that I could think of. So do I have to choose one or should I just say all of them?
You can say, you can have some honorable mentions, of course, mate.
All right. So the main one I'll have Chain Reaction, Diana Ross. Because okay. in the black and white bit of the video,
yeah,
when it goes all 60s and she was in like I don't know why. I just
got the little bob, hasn't she?
Yes, yeah. Yes. And it just as a little kid, I just thought, oh wow, she's beautiful. And also that song, I think the Bee Gees wrote it.
They like did, yeah.
A lot of, yeah, and you can hear them singing it, kind of. You can sort of hear that. Just a really good song.
Yeah.
You know, a good pop song. And then do you remember I Think We're Alone Now by Tiffany?
Tiffany, mate. See, mate. I listened the other day, I think it was on, I think Six Music, and they played songs that you didn't know were covers, and they played the original of that. I thought that was just a kind of disposable pop song from Tiffany, but apparently some kind of American new wave band or something done it first.
Yeah, it's a new, yeah, I've got it. It's good, actually. It sounds a bit like The Cars. I can't remember what band it is.
It's someone like The Cars, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, but it's not them. It was like... Mm. Much less famous and successful, but like, but still, pretty, you know, you. I remember, I don't know why. I think I found it on an old like punk and new wave US compilation. And then as it started, I was like, you know, children be I was like, hello. And the old feelings came flooding back at Tiffany. Because she was like leading you by the hand in the video, and then she'd like fall to the, we stumble to the ground, and then you say,
yeah.
And I was just like, oh God, I love her. So there's her. And then I think actually this is my first choice because this was a proper
right.
visceral memory of girls at primary school. When I was at primary school, remember like when lunchtime seemed to go on for about 3 months, and it was like, you're a kid, and you just think, surely, like all the teachers must have died or something's gone wrong because we've been out here for days and it was probably only an hour. But like, and all the this is how I remember it, like all it was really hot summer and all the grass was dead, it was like straw, and all the one of the girls had like a tape player, which was pretty mad then anyway, which took batteries I guess, and we were out on the grass and I was one of the little infants that the big girls thought was cute, and so they'd have me around, and I think I had to press the button on the tape recorder, right, and rewind it and stuff. So I had a little job, like a little DJ, and they were rehearsing some dance, right, where they were doing cartwheels. And so even though like they must have been 10 or 11, they seemed like grown women to me. I was probably 6, and I was in charge of the tape recorder or whatever I was doing. And I just remember them doing cartwheels, and then, and I could see their knickers, and I was like, which is fine because I was half their age. And then, and it was just like, it was just a great time to be alive. And when I hear that song,
that was Tiffany.
No, Wham.
Oh, Wham. Nice.
Oh no, yeah, no, they were doing, they couldn't have done a dance to Tiffany. It was too slow.
Yeah,
this is Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go. Nice. Do you remember it?
What a tune, mate.
Oh, takes me straight back. Oh, and it's man. Like all the girls just doing these cartwheels and like doing this dance and thinking I was this innocent little DJ person they didn't, you know, hired. And actually I was sitting there thinking, oh yeah, like some lusty little old middle-aged man.
Do you know what? The first ass party I ever went to in like my first year at senior school, there was this lad called Lee, and he was like the he was sort of Italian looking, and he was like all the girls loved him, and he was like the first one in my year to get a girlfriend, and we went to this house party, and it was just photos of Wham all around the wall in this front room, and then it's just ridiculous. I can't hear Careless Whisper to this day without picturing all of us sitting around the outside of this sort of front room on the edge of sofas, just staring at Lee having a slow dance, trying to just get his hand on the outside of her jumper while she just kept pushing it away. And all of us were just sitting there just thinking, oh my God, this is actually happening to Wham. Brilliant.
Mate, George Michael must have had his finger on the pulse with... burgeoning sexuality or something. I don't know. It was like, yeah, that. Well, that came after, didn't it? So, Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go must have been one of their first, like, Wham's first hits.
Yeah.
Careless Whisper was Wham, wasn't it? It wasn't George Michael solo.
No, it was solo. It was his first solo. It was kind of in between Wham. I don't think Wham was split. I think he threw that one out before, like, Wham split. Like,
right.
Okay, well, look, while we're talking school... Let's stay
there. Hang on, wait, go on. Sorry, there is an honourable mention here of to actually answer the emotional thing.
Right.
I was really trying to think, and there's loads of songs that, you know, like Father and Son or Cat Stevens and things that have a sort of sad story and literally when you're a kid just really upset you or whatever. I upset my son with that song, actually. I put it on in the car. I said, listen to this. Isn't it like that? You just like it because we're father and son sort of thing. And he just bawled his eyes out. And he wasn't really because of the lyrics. It was just the sound of it. Do you know what I mean? Like, it just sounded, it's sort of regretful and sad, isn't it? But, no, one thing I do remember, I don't know what Olympics it was, but I was a little kid. I was meant to be in bed and my mum and dad would watch the highlights of the Olympics and it had Chariots of Fire, that thing. And I'd feel so overwhelmed emotionally. Yeah. I'd sit on the landing listening to it, thinking, oh, God, this is beautiful.
Well, you couldn't even see the montages or anything. It was just
the sound of it. And they were using it to death. I don't know. Someone will be able. I mean, I can probably work it out now. What Olympics it was, because it would have been the theme song for that Olympics.
Yeah.
Da, 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 da. And it was something to do around that time. I think Daley Thompson's Decathlon was a video game that had that had a shit digital version of that in it. And I still liked that. It was like, it was really, I didn't know. And also, I didn't really, there was no words in it. And it was like, what is this weird music that's just, but I remember that sitting on the landing. And I'm sure some kids were sitting on the landing listening because they actually cared about athletics, but I couldn't have given less of a shit. But it just was really, I just kept thinking, oh, is that music again? Come out of my bedroom and listen to it almost in tears. So that's emotional, I suppose. I wasn't turned on by it for once.
Is that Vangelis?
Chariots of Fire. No, isn't it? It might be. Let me Google it. It was, because there's a film, isn't there? But I wasn't aware of the film.
Yeah.
Chariots of Fire is the film, isn't it? Right, okay. Yeah. So, Vangelis, yeah.
Yeah. Hello. I've interrupted the podcast again, haven't I? Sorry. It won't take a sec. All I want to say is, the songs that we're talking about in this podcast, if we can't play them, it's just because of the regulations regarding playing licensed music and such. So if you want to hear the songs, just go over to Spotify and search Off the Beat and Track Podcast, and you can listen to all the songs because I've put playlists up for each of these. If you can't find it on there,
here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'll send links on all the social media accompanying each episode. So you've just got to press that one button and you can go through and you can enjoy all the songs that our guest picks. Anyway, I'll shut up, get back to the podcast. See you on the other side. Track three, Matt.
I thought that was Vangelis as well. So thank you for telling me that.
It might be. I might be wrong.
No, yours sounds better.
The song reminds you of your time at school, mate.
Right, well, we've done primary school, and that was Wham. So, secondary school, I have gone for, well, definitely something off Bleach by Nirvana, because when that, I mean, I was like into, I don't know, metallic. Well, first of all, I was into not rock music. And then I got into rock music and I was like, you know, the classic, like 1990, I suppose it would have been, but like Guns N' Roses, Metallica, Rage Against the Machine, all that sort of stuff. But Nirvana was sort of a level above that. And I liked Nevermind and I liked all that, those songs. But when I heard Bleach and that down-tuned, sort of sludgy, Black Sabbath-y in a way, that really, like, I don't know, it was just, that was like, oh, found my music, do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. And then that actually led me into a lot of other, later on, like, in life, I started looking into, like, Melvins and a lot of doom and sludgy sort of metal, like I Hate God and stuff like that, which sounds, I mean, it's more extreme, but it is that sort of slow and heavy riff stuff, which is, and they're all those bands, massive fans of Black Sabbath. So there was some logic, I suppose, in the sort of lineage of that. But I was going to pick the song School, which is off the album, because, you know, School.
Yeah.
But probably more like Negative Creep.
Oh, what a record. What a record.
Yeah. Yeah. Machine Head did a really good cover of it, but as a metal song, not as a sort of grunge. Yeah. But it's, I suppose it's metal-ish, isn't it? I mean, that album, if you weren't into rock, you'd just think that was a heavy metal album, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Just,
so did you...
Yeah, that's...
Did you hear Bleach before Nevermind, or did you hear Nevermind and then go back and discover Bleach?
Yeah. No, I... Do you remember, like, back in the... I don't know how old you are, but, like, back in the day... Okay. Oh, yeah, right. So I'm 43 in a couple of weeks, or I don't know, 10th of August, whenever that is. So similar. And, like, we didn't have MTV. That was quite a new thing. But, like, some people had MTV in the house, yeah. And there was, you know, they could... But really, you didn't really... It was like NME, and there was magazines, wasn't there? And then there was tapes that people pass around. And it was quite... I quite liked it, because it was like you could truly, like, feel like you were discovering something.
Totally.
But no, Nevermind was when we were on our family caravan holiday in France, and I remember it because Sexy Motherfucker by Prince was out, and in France they weren't beeping it, so it seemed, wow, really, like, every time it was on the radio I was like, oh my god, I love France. But on that same holiday they were playing almost back to back Teen Spirit, Come As You Are, and Lithium, and it was just like, fucking hell, like, this band have got these three singles, it seemed like these, yeah, singles were out at the same time. But and then when I went and saw Guns N' Roses in 91 or 92, whichever makes sense, because it would have been 92, I guess, at Wembley, or this is the first time I ever heard Nirvana, as it was Faith No More and Soundgarden supporting them. And before they came on, it went ding, 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 and it was like, fucking hell. And the audience were jumping up and down. And I said to my mate, we were like 14 or 15, like, what's this? And he went, oh, it's called Nirvana. And like, and then there was a bloke who ended up being my postman on my bus, and he lent me the tape because he goes, it's shit. There's just that first song and the rest of it's shit, right? So he lent me Nevermind, and I took it home and listened to it on a tape. And I thought, no, he's right, actually. There's that good first song and all the rest, yeah, of it's rubbish. So I sort of parked it, and then we went on holiday in France, and it was like, fucking hell, all these songs. And then, well, to answer your question, it was definitely afterwards, because someone just went, oh, you know Nirvana, they had an album before that. I was like, what? That blew my mind. And then, you know the thing where they give you one earphone? And I was, yeah, like, fucking hell. And it sounded much more sort of dark and brooding and... Yeah. Like lo-fi. And then I think it was just no one had CDs, it was all tapes. I think, yes, it was just like, lend me that tape, and I copied the tape, so it's getting even worse sounding, you know what I mean, every time. But yeah, just really, like, at the time I remember I was doing a paper round, and I was just go out in all weathers and have my headphones on, and generally I'd kill, it took so long, I'd kill two AA batteries on my Walkman. And, you know, when it starts going, and you think, oh, fuck, now I can't listen to music. But, yeah, that album just, yeah. So that, and it reminds me of school, because I remember walking home from school and, first of all, the kid putting it in my ear who was a bit older and he was a bit cooler. And then, you know, if I missed the bus, it was like, oh, at least I can listen to my Walkman and listen to that song.
So as a kid that was into like Guns N' Roses and Metallica, like, could you see a big fundamental difference between like the kind of like the more kind of like the glamorous looking rock music pre Nirvana to the fact that all of a sudden Kurt looked like, you know, this beautiful scruff bag, like, you know, he
just... Oh mate, definitely. I remember I was in I was around my mate's house in Swanley, which is near Dartford, and we were, I guess, 14, 15, and he had on skin-tight black jeans with cowboy boots, right? And on a, you know, cause to be like Slash, and to be in Swanley, to go up Asda and get some, try and buy beer by asking someone to go and get us beer. It just seems so fucking mental to be doing that in skinny, black, stretchy jeans and cowboy boots.
Yeah.
It was a bold move. And the thing is, he hadn't followed through with the rest of the outfit because it was all sort of like stuff he'd got for his birthday or something. Do you know what I mean? So he just had a normal coat on. Like a school winter coat.
Amazing.
But like, and then, I was just looking at it thinking, oh, he looks so fucking cool. I wish I had cowboy boots. My mum never buy me cowboy boots. And even with the like rattly stirrup things, whatever they're called, spurs? I don't know. Not spurs, not that extreme, but like the slash.
I know the things you mean. They're all clipped under the heel sort of thing, didn't they?
Yeah, yeah. So, and we'd walk up there and he was really self conscious of his boots and the boots were really noisy. It was like chonk, chonk. And that just seemed like normal. We were all growing our hair.
Yeah.
We were all like, you know, so like when Nirvana came out and immediately overnight, and it was bandanas and like mirror sunglasses, that whole Guns N' Roses look, which actually they did a lot better than, you know, it was like Poison and Motley Crue and all that.
Yeah.
LA, theirs looked too clean and nice. The Guns N' Roses did look like they'd, you know, they were Motley Crue, lived in a bin for 3 years or whatever. And I thought they looked good because I liked rock stars to look like they were from another planet, like Slash. Close. Yeah. And then I think Kurt Cobain still had that sort of look, you know, like he still looked, they were definitely, you know, like with eyeliner and bleached hair and stuff like that. He still, you know, he put a bit of effort in. But like, as soon as Nirvana became big, that thing, I think it's a fascinating period in music, actually, in sort of, especially in America. It was like what rock and roll was overnight changed. So imagine you were Guns N' Roses, you know, you sort of, it's quite a powerful, there must have been, they were the coolest thing in the world. And overnight they were fucking, you know, washed up, embarrassing. And they were about 27, 28 when that happened. So it's not like they were 40 and they were sort of, you know, doing a stadium tour and wheeling it. But I thought was amazing about Nirvana, and I actually knew Courtney Love a little bit through Russell Brand, and I hung out with her quite a few times in LA and whatever, and we were talking about it. And I was trying to explain to her, like, grunge, you know, in Dartford or whatever, it was like suddenly you didn't need you didn't need expensive trainers and this, and they didn't need cowboy boots that cost 50 quid and, you know, your mum had to go with you to Soho to get them or whatever, embarrassing. We would just go around charity shops and the worst sort of granddaddy looking clothes, you'd look really cool. And it was like, just on a financial level was good. Yeah. But so there was that shift, do you know what I mean? But
it was that point at the MTV Awards where, like, I think it's like Kurt or Dave's like just saying hi Axel down the mic, and it's like, and it's just such a, like, yesterday's news, this is where it's at. And it, you know, I think that was the same one that Pearl Jam were on, and probably Blind Melon and the
chili peppers and God knows what. And it just felt like that look and that kind of overblown rock and roll thing just got put on the back burner for a few years.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think it was Duff. No, who was it up in front? Hey, Axel. Oh, sorry. Yeah, no, it was Nirvana saying Axel, wasn't it? It was like he'd had an argument with Kurt backstage and said, tell your bitch to shut up about Courtney Love. And it was, that's why I was thinking, the tall bass player, Chris Novoselic, was right. Standing up there. Hey, Axel, where's Axel? Axel. And I think at that one, wasn't it when Axl Rose did a duet with Elton John?
Yeah.
Their pianos facing each other. I mean, if you want to look uncool.
Yeah.
You know, and like Guns N' Roses, look on YouTube at the Roxy. That's where I think they were at the best. That Roxy gig, I think it was in 88. So a year after Appetite came out. And they're all on a tiny little stage and they look like they live on the street. And it has, you know, it's proper raw power. And like, yeah, Axel was the problem, really, as brilliant as he was, because Izzy Slash, like Duff was a punk. Izzy and Slash were like rock and roll, you know, like Rolling Stones type, you know, rock and rollers.
Izzy always looked cool as fuck.
He did, yeah. Didn't he? And he wrote a lot of he wrote a lot of the good stuff. So I sort of feel like they maybe deserved another couple of years at the top, Guns N' Roses, before Nirvana came. But then when Nirvana came, it's like, oh, yeah, that's all shit. I do, you know, and then I think not long after Nirvana, because rock went into like Marilyn Manson, Linkin Park, and sort of new metal and not stuff I was into.
Yeah.
And then it was no longer the dominant musical genre in America. It gave way to hip hop and R&B and just, you know, like it isn't that huge thing anymore. It doesn't exist. So probably Nirvana. No, who was the last? I suppose Marilyn Manson and people like that were the last sort of big thing in rock. But then that all seemed too contrived to me. It wasn't very authentic. It didn't seem to come from rock and roll. It came from theatre and, I don't know, just sort of MTV, good videos and visual stuff. But my mate's cowboy boots were soon put at the back of the cupboard.
with the American football top and cycling shorts. Fuck me, that was a bad look, Axel. Why was he doing that?
And he hasn't aged well, has he?
No. My wife loves him. Absolutely loved him. She went to see him a few years ago in London when they done the outdoor show. She said they're brilliant. Like, it was absolutely
great. I watched them. They were brilliant. They put on a show that, I mean, they've got the songs, do you know what I mean, for a start. They got loads of songs. And when I saw them as a kid, it had that air of danger and it was like cool, but it was a bit sort of, I don't know, the sound wasn't loud enough. It was all like a bit shambolic. It sort of felt like, and then obviously with modern screens behind them and better sound and stuff, it was really good. But yeah, it's sad that they didn't get on, sort their shit out and write more music. Because, you know, I think Axl Rose is a really good songwriter. I think there's, even on that Chinese Democracy, there's good songs. It's just like he's singing he sounds like he's strangled. Do you know what I mean? He's like really not using his voice right, because your voice changes and it's like he's in denial. But I think like certain songs like Civil War and Estranged and stuff like that are really good songs. You know, I'd like to see him do a more like stripped back, like him at a piano, just not with all the fucking, because he was a big fan of Nine Inch Nails and like industrial music and more, you know, less rock and roll blues based stuff. Mm. And that's where Slash and him just differ, because Slash has stayed pretty much in his lane the whole time, you know. But then I suppose there's an argument either way.
I think Marilyn Manson got that kind of perfect crossover of rock and roll and Nine Inch Nails. I think that the first stuff from him was a real obvious nod to Trent Reznor and that, I think, in some of the early Manson stuff, definitely. Just before we move on from this question, like, how was school, Matt? Did you enjoy it?
that sounds funny. I've just come home from school.
Good day.
Can I have a biscuit? I thought it was all right. I was I was always in trouble, but then I wasn't a bad kid. I think I was at this really strict grammar school, and same school as Mick Jagger went to, Dartford Grammar School. I thought some of the biggest laughs and like just taking the piss and just absolute chaos of it was great. But there was a lot of cruelty from the, you know, there was sort of like, it was a load of paedophiles. There was like basically a paedophile ring at our school. And there was a nasty air to some stuff. Do you know what I mean? And being an all boys school, I think some of the bullying and the sort of cruelty is worse than at a mixed school for some reason. I think like the theme, I think kids, I don't know. It feels like, and maybe I'm being naive because I know girls can be horrible to each other, but it would have taken some of the brutality out of it, having girls around. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, cool.
But then, you know, I was bullied and I bullied other people. It was this sort of like dog eat dog thing. And there was definitely a change when you go from, I think little kids have empathy. And then when you're trying to survive in secondary school, empathy goes out the window because you think, oh, look, as long as everyone's not having a go at me, I'm all right. So yeah. I'm happy with it. And then you sort of learn it again. So like 14, 15, it's a bit nasty. And then by the time we were coming back for sixth form, everyone was like, all right with each other. You sort of learn, you know, it's just fucking somewhere you go to learn.
Yeah.
And the year sizes have gone down, and I don't know, just sort of, it seemed quite chilled out. So in the last days, I really enjoyed it. And we had a common room and you felt a bit more like, you know, you weren't just stuck in the playground. But then I did get expelled, but I...
Why'd you get expelled?
The most ridiculous reason, but basically, Well, the thing I got expelled for, it sounds like I'm stalling.
Yeah, just a bit.
I drew a penis on the cover of Return of the Native by Thomas Hardy. And I drew it 2 years before the teacher saw it, right? And there was a bloke in the foreground and there was all these hills going off in the background. And he was on a horse or he was... No, he wasn't on a horse. I think I drew a horse as well. But his dick went out of his body and then over all the hills, and then in the distant hill, it was his helmet sticking up with like ding sort of marks around it. Actually, rather beautiful. And then I'm sat there, and I've been told, you know, like I was disruptive. I was a bit disruptive and stuff. But then I did. There was English literature, and I was really good. I got a B at A level in the end. But the teacher said, like, stop it, whatever was going on. And then this kid next to me saw that and couldn't stop laughing. And so the teacher said, bring it, what are you laughing at? And he said, here's book. She said, bring it here, and then saw it. And it literally was really, like, a bitter pill to swallow because I'd done that 2 years before when we started the class. And she looked at him and went, well, go and see the head of year. And then I was always in this situation, getting told off for something that they keep pointing to, and that thing's quite funny, so it's quite odd not to laugh. Yeah. Do you think that's all right? Do you think that's the behaviour? You know, and you got to keep looking at this penis. That's, you know, and you think like in this context, that's become even funnier. So yeah. Now I'm trying not to laugh. But he just goes, right, you got to go home now. You're not allowed back to school. If you come back on these premises, we'll call the police. You're allowed back for your exams. When you come back for your exams, you have to wear your... And it was like, what the fuck? And suddenly I was walking home and I was just like, oh, shit, I'm in so much trouble. I went home and then, I did get in a lot of trouble, obviously. But, like, on the same day, they kicked out two of my mates and then somebody else the next day. And it was like, what they were doing, we realised afterwards, was because of I can't remember what it was called, but like they had league tables and their budgets, because they were grant maintained.
Oh, you're talking about Ofsted?
No, because they were the inspectors. Maybe it was, I don't know, but like they're basically, if you weren't going to do well in your exams, they expelled you so that you're an independent
right
thing, yeah, and you weren't included. You weren't included in their figures, which is, I mean, horrifically bad schooling, isn't it, to do something like that? So basically, they probably said, "Look, these are the four, five, I don't know, eight kids in that year who are probably going to fuck this up for us." So basically, whatever they do, the teacher who sent me for the Willy on the book wasn't involved, I don't think. The head of year was basically, he, you know, been slipped a piece of paper saying, look, if any of these, like, literally running in the corridor, send them home and whatever. So weirdly, and then it was only like 2 or 3 weeks to my exams, and I suddenly didn't have to go to school the next day. And it was like, oh shit, this is so weird. But I just revised because I had nothing else to do. And I was going to do all right anyway. I think they thought I wasn't, but I was always all right. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I wasn't putting the effort in, but for the exams, I would have put the effort in. So I did all right in my exams. And I got the highest English literature grade in the year. So hopefully they were gutted. They kicked me out. But it was an horrible place. There's some horrible teachers there. And some, like, I think, you know, nowadays when you think of, like, you know, for want of a better term, snowflakes or like millennials, you know, I remember being punched in the ear by a teacher and, you know, like, properly, they used to put us in detention and make us write those mad essays, like living inside a ping pong ball and doing lines. Do you know what I mean? Like, which is basically sort of mental cruelty, isn't it? Totally. Just writing lines. Or they'd say, write 4 sides of A4 on... It was always something really ridiculous. Do you know what I mean? Like, the one I remember is that on life inside a ping pong ball, just to try and, like, because it was like, well, what the fuck do I write? And then you'd write 4 pages of this drivel, and then they'd come in and without even looking at it, just tear it up and go, get out. And it was just like, sort of, you know, pretensions of public school and the army in a way, just like, oh, well done, you fucking, you know, you're a 40-odd-year-old man basically torturing young boys.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's all a bit weird. But apart from that, mate, I loved it.
First record you bought, Matt?
God, this is well odd because, I mean, I do remember going down Arprice.
Where was this, in Dartford?
In Dartford, yeah. And, like, I used to spend so long in record shops. You remember when it was like, I'd just look at the covers and read the song titles and stuff. And then it seemed like a revelation when they had a listening thing and you could take it and go, can I listen to this?
Yeah.
And then later, when they had where you could scan the barcode and you could just listen to it in HMV on Oxford Street or whatever. And I'd have a stack of CDs and I'd be going through them, you know, like, and I sort of, I mean, I love going on a Spotify binge and just, like, finding new stuff. And I think that's, you know, way more effective at finding new stuff. But when I sold all my CDs or gave them away to charity or whatever, and as everyone else has, really, because it's like, well, why am I keeping these? But some of them have got, like, graying, you know, really like faded $14.99, $16.99 stickers. And you think, well, how the fuck did I?
Yeah.
I remember when I used to go out with a tenner in my pocket and buy fags, booze, be drunk, and get home somehow. And do you know what I mean? And so to spend $16.99 on the CD without really knowing if it was any good,
yeah,
was mental. But the first thing I remember, the first CD I ever owned was Velvet Underground. Banana album, whatever that's called,
with that's the banana. Quite impressed. The Andy Warhol album, isn't it?
Yeah. And that was the first CD, and I was late to CDs because I didn't have a CD player. So I was probably 14, 15 when I got that.
Well, before you move on from that, how, as a 14-year-old boy, how did you discover that, and what did you make of that when you first heard it?
I discovered it from. Do you remember there was an advert with "Shiny, Shiny"?
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever that song's called. I haven't listened to it for years. And it's got that sort of weird, creeping, squeaking, like, fucking weird drum stuff going on.
It's like scratching the strings or something, isn't it? It's like...
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, John Cale and I. All that. So, like, so it was on an advert, and then I remember... I probably was 16, actually, because I remember it was my first girlfriend. Her brother-in-law had... that album, and then I remember that song got me into it. And then even like the stuff with Nico singing Sunday morning and all that stuff. But like Heroin was the song where you go, I actually want to listen to it now. But like, that's brilliant, isn't it? That album's really good.
Of a record that is.
Yeah. And so there was that and like Less Cool. I had the Pulp Fiction soundtrack. So I was probably 16.
There's some tunes on there.
Yeah, I know. I'd never heard Son of a Preacher Man until I saw that film. And I was like, fucking hell, it's the best song ever.
Yeah.
And I didn't realise she was white, Dusty Springfield. I just thought, this sounds like Motown. Sounds like, you know. There's that. But like, I think the first, I didn't go and get it myself, but De La Soul, 3 Feet High and Rising, when I was probably 11 or 12, was... I think I just asked for it for this. This is how I got stuff then. It was like, asked for it for my birthday or Christmas. And I got it for one of those. And I loved that album for ages. And I can still remember all the weird skits and samples.
So
and
mad, wasn't it?
Yeah. Potholes in my lawn.
You can't find it on Spotify. Like, that album's not on there.
Do you know why?
I imagine they probably didn't clear any samples back then.
No, that's it, yeah. But hang on, I felt like
I think Say No Go or maybe I Know's on there, but the album I'm sure is not.
Right. Interestingly, when I gave my CDs away, there was that and a couple of, who else was it? I don't know. There was someone else I discovered they weren't on there, so I kept, Gravediggers, there's an album with Bang Your Head on it. And I was like, which another hip-hop thing, so I imagine because of samples. And they were the only two CDs that I kept because I thought, I can't listen to, I like those songs. Yeah. I can't listen to them on Spotify. But, that 3 Feet High and Rising was so good, wasn't it?
It's an absolute masterpiece. It's my favourite hip-hop album by a mile. I just think, Tread Water, that's a fucking tune.
And
just seeing it. And I think that, that was my first year at college when that came out. And it was that, that would have been 88, 89, I think. And it was just a mental time for music, Matt. You know, you had, I guess, Guns N' Roses, but you also had, everything that was happening in Manchester. You had like house music starting to explode. You had like hip hop, coming from everywhere. And it was just a mental time for me. You know, Roses and Mondays. And it was like a really exciting kind of, even stuff like the British, like Salt of Soul and things like that. There was so much that little kind of period. And it was like, it weren't like any other hip hop I'd heard, because up until then it was Public Enemy, NWA and stuff like that. And then it was like De La Soul. And then that just opened up the doors to like Tribe Called Quest, Jungle Brothers, Moaning Love, Queen Latifah. It was like, oh man, this is fucking great.
But I really liked that sort of like what they kept saying was like the Daisy Age and all that. It was like, and that's never, I don't know. I mean, I'm not a massive hip hop. I'm not knowledgeable about hip hop at all. But like, there's, it's not never sort of done that. Is it Kid? No, I can't remember. But like, sort of trippy, hippie version of it where it's not about gangster rap and all that stuff or NWA or aggressive. Although when you listen to like Express Yourself and stuff like that, you realize, this isn't what you sort of remember it being, like aggressive, whatever. It's like same sort of thing, samples and tunes really, wasn't it? But I met that album was great. And all the, I didn't know what was going on in this, like, so Little Darwin, ding, 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 playing the piano.
Look at him go.
And like, what does Touche et Lele Pou mean? And there's that quiz show.
Yeah.
Pos de Noose. And there's a mad, and I was just like, I don't know what this all means, but I really like it.
Well, I think Trugoy, if I remember rightly, was yogurt spelt backwards.
Yeah. And Pos de Noose was Sound Sop backwards. Yes,
that's right.
I can't remember, but like, it was fucking brilliant. And it still sounds good. Yeah. It's still like, it doesn't age badly, that sort of stuff.
Massively.
I wasn't cool enough to know the Stone Roses or Happy Mondays at that point.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember like the farm, and do you know what I mean? Like, whoever made it onto Top of the Pops and got like played all together now and stuff like that. But it was, there was some weird, like, do you remember Carter USM, which was a bit later, and it was like some weird stuff that just doesn't
it's a big, big thing for me, that scene. I've interviewed Jim Bob from Carter on here. And I interviewed Miles Hunt from the Wonder Stuff yesterday, and that era of early 90s UK sort of guitar music, you know, in between, like, I guess, Manchester and Britpop, that bit before then of EMF and Pop Elite itself and all Senseless Things, all of them bands, I really loved that little moment, because that was me at 18, so that was like what was going on in the clubs I was going to, and it was like, yeah, I'm loving this. It was like, it was, and it was, everyone could dress like Kurt, everyone, you could just be a scruffy bugger and like, and just jump around to this sort of music.
Jesus Jones, EMF, there was some like Ned's Atomic Dustbin, like, it just sort of, it's been erased. It was sort of like nowadays, and I'm guilty of this as well, just sort of thinking it went Nirvana and then Britpop, Oasis and Blur, do you know what I mean? But like, there was all that going on. I remember, like, Carter, I remember some of the lyrics were fucking brilliant. Come and then you fucking sadist, pucker up and kiss the babies, kiss until they die of rabies, get your tits out for the ladies and all that. I don't know what that song was, but like,
it's incredible. It's stuck in there. Like, you know, and you forget, like, you know, they had like a number one album, you know, like they headlined Glastonbury, and you just think, you know, and then you look at like EMF and Jesus Jones, both had number ones in America. And it's like, you know, that's no mean feat, you know, to be able to do that, that's pretty big time to go over to the States, you know, and have these huge hits. And but yeah, they kind of, that little moment does, like you say, it's like Manchester, you know, Nirvana, Britpop, and sort of float in the wilderness a little.
Unbelievable was a massive hit, wasn't it? Unbelievable. Oh, yeah. But like, I remember, and you will as well, I reckon, if you're from Grays, like Wallabies.
Mate, and all day long.
And do you remember like having the, I was so desperate to get a medallion with like an Africa or badge. The yin yang. Yeah.
We used to get the train up to London and go into a shop called Mash. And there was this shop called Mash in Tottenham Court Road. And like, and you could get the Africa badge on the thing. And it was like, yeah, I have my purple Wallabies.
I have purple dreadful. Wallabies. And tie-dyed whatever the trousers were that went with it.
Yeah.
Oh, mate, what a fucking bizarre time.
Track five, then, while we're talking... I guess clubbing eras. The song that soundtracked your years clubbing, Matt.
Right. So with clubbing, I had a love hate relationship with it, because in Dartford, I bet you know Zenz. Do you remember Zenz?
I had done an indie night at Zenz. I promoted an indie night at Zenz in about 1994, maybe 3 or 4, and we used to do it on like a Wednesday night. Oh my. Do you know what, right? I to this day will still say that it's the only time I've ever experienced when people say you can be bored to tears. I remember DJing one night and welling up thinking, I'm so fucking bored, I think I'm going to cry.
Because what? Because it was empty?
It was half empty, yeah. And there was just this one Dartford maniac that would turn up every week, like grab me round the scruff of the neck and tell me to play I'm a Believer by the Monkees. And I used to literally just stand there having screaming rouse him every week saying I'm not doing it. And but there was a bit of a kind of scene in Dartford that used to turn up. There was that kind of like rock rap crossover scene. There was lots of people in like Dog Eat Dog and Rage and Faith No More and lots of stuff. Yeah. Like, I remember them sort of turning up in abundance.
I was probably there, but hang on, what year? Because I remember when Zenz on a... might have been a Wednesday night, did, but it was like a alternative night. I mean, it was less indie. They would play like rock as well.
Yeah,
not
that,
just
that was it. Yeah.
It's probably that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I remember because we were, but it was always quite empty, and it was like just and I was always like, yeah, it was. And also, even though we were all unified by a scene, we all sat because who became a good mate of mine actually, but one of them, there was a rival band, a metal band. And we were like rock and roll band, and we seemed to have separated into two groups. And the girls there was some crossover with girls who could come to me, but there was like this very, there was a cold war going on, even though there was about 50 fucking alternative people in Dartford who should have just all been friends. But like, yeah, we used to go there, and it was, so that might, yeah, that was like the only alternative thing going on, right? But if you wanted to go clubbing, which was the main thing, like house music, and you know, it was the main thing. But you remember, like, it was, you had to have the right shoes, you had to have the right shirt. It was just, we all had gold hoop earrings. I remember when we first left Dartford to go out for the night in London, and we went to an indie club, went to Pop Scene on Charing Cross Road. You remember that?
Yeah,
at Astoria. And that was fucking huge and full of people and playing the music we liked, you know, because it was after sort of, like Nirvana would have been extremely uncool to play, but they were playing Britpop and Happy Monday, Stone Roses and whatever, you know, like sort of indie, I suppose. And these girls just took the piss out of us and said, why are you all wearing fucking gold hoop earrings? You know, like we just didn't realise. And I remember the girls pulled them out and threw them away, and we were like, we're reborn. We've like found a new world. Everyone in Dartford had a gold earring, shaved head, shirt. Oh God, it was awful. So we started traveling to go to clubs that we liked, you know, because we weren't those kids. But and I just never felt at home in that. And actually, I've got a playlist on Spotify with all house music from that era because it's so evocative to me. Do you know what I mean? But like, I fucking hated it. I just hated it. I couldn't pull in there. We couldn't talk to the girls in there. It was not me. Do you know what I mean? But then, like I said, the music, actually, retrospectively, I go, oh, actually, you know, some of these songs are really good. I'm a Dreamer, like all that stuff, like those club bangers, yeah. All that shit. But so this song is, it actually bridged those two worlds, because this song was played in every club, indie, rock clubs, everything. Born Slippy, and I bet everyone's fucking chosen that, but Born Slippy by Underworld. I hadn't seen Trainspotting, but I just knew this song kept being played, and I thought it was Damon Albarn singing, yeah. For some reason. I thought it was like some like weird thing he'd done, some side project. Yeah. And I remember I was in Pop Scene, LA 2, which is sadly gone now, London Astoria, and some girl goes, oh, you look like him. And I said, what do you mean? She goes, you look like bloke. And I was like, what bloke? What, from this song? And she said, no, from the film. And I was like, what? Because I had shaved head and earring and looked a bit, I didn't look anything like him, but I looked a bit like Renton to her.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, what's that? And like, that's what I'm talking about. Like nowadays, if there was a film out, it would be, and it was having that much of a cultural sort of earthquake, Trainspotting, I'd know about it, I'd heard about it. But it was just, I just had no way of, until someone told me about it. You think now, especially social media, if there's anything that's in vaguely making any sort of cultural movement, Everyone knows about it immediately. And also it's owned by every age. It's actually more sort of 30-year-olds who are owning the culture. But then it was like 18-year-olds, 16-year-olds, like, you know, like bands. You went to gigs and you didn't see anyone over 25. Yeah. I don't remember seeing, you know, like it would have seemed weird. It was like nowadays it seems like it's people our age who are still consuming things.
Yeah.
But so I'd never heard of Trainspotting, and then but just that, yeah, that song just so fucking good. And I remember always thinking, oh, this will be what music sounds like from now on, like even rock, like this, because it's not you can't really pigeonhole, can you? You
not
can't
at all.
It's got rock in it, it's got what I would call, because I like heaviness in music, and it's got that. It's got that, like, fucking, you know, the drum beat. It sounds, yeah, it sounds mental. And him going, lager, lager, you know, like, it was just brilliant. But then, obviously, I thought that was their style, and they do lots of songs like that. Yeah. And then, you know, there was some other good tunes and stuff. But, like, that was, I mean, what a song, you know. Yeah. But like I said, every club played that, and it always went off when that... You know, it was always like a moment when that song was playing.
Do you know?
And it would always take me back drinking. It was always cans. It couldn't have been Stella. I would have been fucked. But like,
It's so weird. It's like I've run like an alternative club in Essex for like years and years and years, and to this day, that still gets played, and the reaction is exactly the same as it was in 1995 or whenever it was, 94, 95. The minute them opening sort of delayed, sort of whatever they notes, it's just like pure fucking euphoria, and like, and it's still, it's still like, there's not many songs that, you know, that still, you know, that have been indie club classics for you know, nigh on 30 years that you can still play and get that huge response just from the opening, you know, an intro, I guess. What a record. What a record. Okay. Favourite song from an artist from your home county, Matt?
Home county. Right. Well, that's Ken. And like I sort of briefly mentioned, Mick Jagger went to my school. So I'm going to go with Stones. And Wild Horses.
Oh. Do you know what? Watch home. It's like my fave as well.
Yeah, it's so good. I had someone at school had the best of the Rolling Stones, some compilation that it was their dad. This was the thing. It was like, we had all this great music. We lived in a great era of rock. But we also, people would discover, because of that Oliver Stone film, The Doors and The Stones and Jimi Hendrix. And like, there was a lot of 60s music that people were really, you know, it wasn't massive. Like, it was like massive. I just remember like Jimi Hendrix and The Doors were massive in Dartford. People were like,
You saying that, and you mentioning the Velvet Underground and how you discovered it. I discovered Heroin by the Velvet Underground through buying The Doors soundtrack.
Ah, right, yeah, because it was playing in the club when Andy Warhol was there. I'm glad that wasn't you discovered Heroin the drug. that was on that soundtrack, wasn't it? Well, I already knew it, but then I didn't know, like, I liked that bit in the film. I'd love to watch that film, actually, I can't be asked, but it probably isn't that good, really. But I remember Val Kilmer giving quite a good, pretty good, pretty neat, I love my girl, all that stuff. But I used to take the day off school, pretend I was ill, and then drink whiskey and watch The Doors when I was about 15 or 16. And like, whiskey was really hard to get. I was like, you know, but then I'd get a little buzz on and watch that and feel like I was such a bohemian.
Yeah.
And then I'd fall asleep and then my mum and dad would come home, or mum would come home and be like, how are you feeling? But like, I'm bit tired. I was like, literally just wanted to watch that film again and whatever. But like, Wild Horses, because it was the first, we had it as our first dance, our wedding as well, me and my wife, because we both love it. But it was, I was listening to that compilation of the Stones and it just stood out. Do you know what I mean? It's just like, oh wow, just a ballad, but one that's sort of haunting. And I love, is it Sticky Fingers, that album?
Yeah.
Dead Flowers as well, which is weird because, you know, he's from Dartford, Mick Jagger, and he's literally singing in a sort of country twang, which he does. But I love, Dead Flowers and Wild Horses. Really, I just always loved them. And Dead Flowers has got some sort of like a sort of death country vibe, and Wild Horses has got, there was a cover of it by The Sundays. Do you remember that?
One of my favourite ever records is their cover of it. Like Harriet, I think Harriet Wheeler's got one of the best voices ever.
Yeah.
I'll probably say it's my favourite cover version ever. I fucking adore that cover.
So good. And like, it's sort of, sometimes I could be, back when I used to listen to that, more in the mood for the cover sometimes because it's got that Mazzy Star thing.
Totally.
I love Mazzy Star. So like Wild Horses, and I tried to play on the guitar because I used to play the guitar very, very, very badly and only a few chords. But then in lockdown, I thought I'm going to learn this properly, and then I've given up quite soon. But like, quite quickly. I gave up. But like, it's got a weird B minor in the intro that's like always put me off because it's like, I can't fucking do that. And I learned how to do it. And just from, you know, like when you play something and you get, you reconnect with the song a bit. And it's just fucking brilliant. And like, so it was our first dance at our wedding. And then when we were getting married at this winery in California, there was this bloke outside just playing a guitar for, I don't know, nothing to do with our wedding. It was just like going on at this winery. And as we walked past, he was playing it as well, like an instrumental version of it. I was like, oh, fucking hell, that's weird. But yeah, it's just such a good song. And like, it's got that, a lot of the stuff I like, and you sort of got a sort of wistful, regretful thing going on, which always works, you know, like it's always good in a song.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's my favourite song from my home county. What happens if you're from central London? What do you say? Do you have, is it just London if you're from London?
I imagine so, yeah. Yeah. Like well, you can be DJ now, Matt, because the last song, you're going to get to turn someone on to something that they maybe don't know. And for track 7, a song that many may not know that you would like them to hear.
This is hard because I haven't thought of anything good, really. But, like, I haven't... Let me think. I've got 3 things written down, and now I look at them, I think, nah. But there's a song by Leonard Cohen called The Window.
Oh, what a beautiful record.
You know it, right? So I love it anyway because it's got that violin at the beginning and it's just really beautiful. And I don't really listen to that stuff anymore. I went through a period of listening to a lot of Leonard Cohen and Neil Young, Bob Dylan and sort of, you know, I don't know. But, and I do still love them all. I just don't find, I just don't see, I don't got this, like, I used to have this much, I spend a lot more time not literally doing this, but with the vibe of looking out of a rainy window. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And that, so that rainy window music.
I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah. But then I don't, nowadays I don't indulge that feeling because I think I'd get stuck there. So I'll listen to, I don't know, I Hate God because I like that sludge, you know, yeah. And I get stuck in a rut actually of listening. I think like, you know, listen to something else, but The Window by Leonard Cohen, because I love the lyric, O Tangle of Matter and Ghost. So as a description of a human being, a tangle of matter and ghost, I think that's fucking amazing. Yeah. And he was such a good lyricist and poet. And that really speaks to me, that. But like all the lyrics, actually, Why Do You Stand by the Window, Abandoned to Beauty and Pride, Thorn of the whatever it is, it's fucking brilliant. So if people don't know that, because it's not on the best of Leonard Cohen, basically, it's, I don't know what album that's on, I can't remember, but always loved that song and not that many people know about it, but you know, so that. Can I have 2 more?
You can.
Right, so Tool are a band I love, and I totally understand people not getting them or liking them, because I spent 10 years not liking them or getting them, and people would play it to me and it just sounded like I just fucking hated it. I didn't get it. And then something clicked and I got the album, the second to last album, 10,000 Days, really was the one I was like, oh, actually, this is really good. And then once I clicked with it, I love them. And it's like, in a similar way to like Radiohead, it's, Radiohead is like, if you're listening to Radiohead, you can't put Radiohead into a compilation of sort of music from that time.
Yeah.
Because it's its own vibe. Do you know what I mean? And I find Tool is its own vibe. And it's like, if you're listening to Tool, you just got to listen to Tool. But I find it, because when I'm writing or like, it's like sci-fi, I don't know, it just really is evocative for me. And it's like science fiction, but soulful, but like slightly creepy and weird. But, you know, but if you're not going to get into it, it's, you know, it's a weird sort of band to unlock. And even people who are like metalheads or alternative, you know, people who, there's a snobbery about it. So I remember talking to people and they're like, oh yeah, I love all your music choices, but fucking hell, Tool, come on, you know. So it's like, you sort of end up just liking it on your own and sort of reaching out, do you like Tool? And when someone else does, it's like, you know, it's like this thing. But the songwriting too, I would say, because it's like, I don't know, just listen to Writing 2 by Tool.
Okay.
Yeah. Because it's like, if you're going to like them, then that song could unlock it for you. It's not the most catchy. There's stuff which are more gettable, but like, I just think that song, I used to listen to it on my mountain bike and just on repeat and go for a ride. And it's like music you can live inside, and it gives you images in your head. And I don't know, it's just like fucking deep. And then if you put on normal music afterwards, you're like, oh, this doesn't hit the spot that Tool does. So that. And then there's a cover of a Misfits song called Skulls. Do you know that? No surprises. But Lemonheads did a cover of it, a little acoustic cover, and it's really nice.
Oh, so what album's that on?
It's on a Rarities and B-Sides album.
Right.
I don't know how I found it, but he's not even... It's Evan Dando, isn't it? He's not like the guitar. It sounds like it's like a rehearsal sort of thing.
There's lots of Evan Dando rarities that sound like that. Like I'm a bit of a fan, and so I've heard that. I'm
massive
Lemonheads fan.
It's funny because the juxtaposition of like Glenn Danzig's like one verse, he's like, cut the heads off little girls and put them on my wall, and all these like dark.
Yeah.
The lyrics are so dark. It's like corpses all hang lifeless and limp, whatever. And it's all like horror lyrics. But Evan Dando's doing it as a sort of ballad. It's beautiful. Oh, it's really beautiful, actually. It actually reminds me, there's someone on YouTube did Slayer's Rain in Blood lyrics, right, to the tune of Take Me Home Country Roads.
Right.
It's worth finding that as well. It's a similar vibe. It's got, because he's the, you know, like, what's it called? If you just put Country Roads Slayer or something, you'll find it. It's this black and white video of this bloke who he's just done it for a laugh.
Yeah.
And it's really good because the lyrics go with the song, and it's sort of like, it does your head in a bit because it's a mashup. You're like, what? Hang on. But they've both got a similar vibe, actually. But yeah, Lemonheads cover of Misfits Skulls is good.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, all of these songs, Matt, I put on all of them that are available, I put on a Spotify playlist to accompany this so people can get stuck right in there.
Wake me up before you go.
Okay. Matt, thanks so much for your time, mate. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks.
There you go. Wonderful chat. Thanks loads to Matt for giving up his time, giving up his Thursday evening to sit and reminisce and talk music with me. I had an absolutely lovely time doing that. Like I said at the beginning, if you enjoyed that, then go and have a look in the archives of Off the Beaten Track, because there's a bundle of episodes for you to get your teeth stuck into. So go and have a looky over there. Thanks once again to Matt. And thanks to you lot for listening and supporting. If you want to support this anymore, there's also a Patreon page. You can go over there and get stuck in there and support the podcast and get access to over 100 episodes that have never been released to the masses. All right, that's me done. Oh, just quickly, you can find out about everything at Pod Bible. You can go to podbiblemag.com. That's where you can get all your podcast recommendations. That's Scroobius, Pip, Mine, Adam's magazine. But that's not what I meant to say. But we'll leave it in there. It's a free plug. Offthebeatentrackpodcast.com. Oh, yeah. Sorry. I've butted in yet again. I just want to quickly tell you about this magazine. It's called Pod Bible. Now, Pod Bible is the new essential guide to podcasts. It's put together alongside Spotify and Acast, and it's a one-stop shop to tell you all about the podcasts you maybe know about, but definitely about a load of the podcasts that you probably don't know about that we think you should know about. I mean, in the first edition, there's interviews with Adam Buxton, interviews with Craig Parkinson, there's features on Jade Adams, and there's just an abundance of information about so many exciting podcasts that are out there. Also, Spotify have given us these amazing little codes. So if you do get a print copy, you can just turn on your Spotify on your phone, scan the little code, and it just automatically opens up the podcast on your listening device. How good's that? if you haven't managed to get a print copy, then just go over to www.podbiblemag.com and read it online, because the digital version is all over there and it's all free. So every other month there'll be a new edition out. So go and have a look and support us on the social medias as well. Podbiblemag.com.
It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network with me, Stu Whiffin.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.